a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, kids, here we go. Episode 279. Oh, goodness. Man, missed a couple of days this week. It's been a rough week. I think we're good today and we're good tomorrow. Man, so yesterday... So, okay, my trip to Michigan, as you may have heard, was eventful and strange. In short, this project we've been working on forever is on hold. And when things go on hold in the ecclesial world, they often go on hold indefinitely. And so, yeah, this kind of put me into a tailspin of rethinking a ton of stuff about how I want to roll Calyx out and try to get my apostolate going and stuff. And so I was kind of already I needed to take a day and just reflect. And then yesterday I got up super early to come in and record. I had to work all day. And man, I just woke up in a funk. I just woke up hurting, dude. I was not in a good mood. My right side of my neck had a tweak in it, and it must have been pinching a nerve. It was going over all the way down into my shoulder, and I was just like in pain. And I got up and came in, got coffee, got everything set up, and I took three passes. I'm sorry, I'm knocking equipment around. I took three passes at the show yesterday. Andrew just wasn't. I was not going to say anything remotely worth listening to, and I have decided to just respect you, my dear listeners. if I can't put something out that I think is at least my hardcore fans want to hear, I've just decided not to do it. I'd rather you listen to a live feed. If you're listening to the stream, I'd rather you listen to something I did that I thought was great and I was proud of. Or if you're a podcast listener, you're probably like four or five episodes behind anyway. It's not like you're going to notice this giant gap. So as that was the decision I made, and I just texted my producer and I was just like, you know what? I'm not going to put anything out worth listening to today. So I'm not going to put anything out. It's kind of like some of those winemakers that like they only make wine on certain years, you know. It's like, it's got to be kind of like, they'll always make some kind of wine, but they might sell it off or something. But there's some years that are so bad that people just won't make wine, you know. And there's like non-vintage stuff they'll only do a bottled vintage, like an actual year vintage on an incredible year. But the rest of the time they're mixing things from different vintages, you know. So it's kind of like that, you know. It's like, you know, there has to be a minimal level of like, I don't mind kind of struggling through one and trying to figure out what to say and trying to think my thoughts maybe not flowing as beautifully as I would like, but I've kind of gotten to the point and sneaking up on 300 episodes, I've just raised the bar in my mind a little bit, and I'm not scared to just punt for that reason. So I punted yesterday. If you missed the show, I'm sorry. All right, so before I got some stuff to talk about today. I think it's pretty interesting. I think this is going to be a good show. I shouldn't say that up front. I should let you decide that afterwards. But before I start getting into my thoughts on things at the moment, I want to send a shout out to my alma mater, Thomas Aquinas College. They are opening an East Coast campus. And I'll tell you a story about, I remember hearing about the possibility of this. I got a great story from that dinner. I'll tell you in a second. But, so there was an old school in Northfield, Massachusetts. And I guess the Christian something foundation, the Hobby Lobby money people, you know, they had this campus, like 270 acres or something like that. All these old brick buildings, this classical, like old school campus. It was a Christian secondary school. And it was just sitting empty, and they were willing to give it away if someone would step up and take it over, make a classical Christian education college and do something. And so last I heard, we were in second place and it looked like it wasn't going to happen. And then a couple months ago, I heard that we did get it. And then they just made the announcement that's been all over Facebook. So TAC is doing an East Coast campus. So we're now bi-coastal, you know, which is a great tradition in Great Books education. You know, St. John's College has had Annapolis initially and then Santa Fe for the longest time. And, so now there's going to be TAC, California and TAC in the New England area, you know, in the upper, was it Northeast? Is that what they call it? In Massachusetts, I think it is. Northfield, Massachusetts, I believe it is. I should have looked that up before I announced this. Anyway, so congrats to TAC, because I know that we'd reached, and I want to talk a little bit about, why they're doing a second campus. Because they're building a second campus and their school has 400 students. That's full enrollment. That's shocking. That should be absolutely shocking in the modern educational world. They have an entire college, Great Books, liberal education college. And from the moment they designed it, 400 students is top enrollment. Now, I think that they let students in on the freshman year kind of based on like 411, 412 or something, because they know they're going to lose some along the way. But I think top enrollment, like the way the place is designed, is to handle 400. Now, you would ask yourself, why would you do that? Why would you build a second campus? Why wouldn't you just build another dorm and build some more buildings and, you know, something like that? Yeah, it's they've started with the end in mind. Good Aristotelians, right? And I love that. I love things like that. I love like Anchor Steam, and I love different companies that are like, look, we're gonna make X amount of product and sell it. And once we get to that point, we're going to find other ways to get better. We're going to make it tastier. We're going to make it more affordable. We're going to make the work experience better for our people. There are ways to get better that aren't getting bigger. And I think that is something that we're missing in the modern world, especially in the realm of business, but in the realm of education as well. There are ways to get better without getting bigger. Now, I say that as a person that is a man of substance, right? And I always say that I got to the point where I couldn't get any better in quality, so the only way to improve was quantity. And so I just became more of me, hence my size. but that's bull, right? There's ways to get better without getting bigger, and TAC speaks to that. Now, they're building a second campus. And if, from what I understand, I don't know what the top enrollment will be for that campus, but they are, I'm assuming they're focusing on the same thing. Now, why? They want it because they understand that education is something more than what happens in the classroom. They wanted a village. They wanted people to live in an experience of conversation and wonder and relationship centered around the life of the mind and these works and the sacraments, and those two pillars to kind of be the thing that holds up this overall edifice, which is this community life. And they make these decisions down to the very small details. They give free food from the cafeteria to anyone who works there, so that the professors are very likely to, and I know that they do, come for some of them all three meals a day. They will come to class, they will come, go through the same line, look for a place to sit and sit down. I got to know so many people that teach at that school that I didn't ever have in class by just over the multitude of meals I accidentally ate with them. And it created a camaraderie. It created a connection, or a place to fight and argue. It's like, look, I know I've been, there's been times when I've been a little, cynical or critical about, my alma mater at times, but I really thank God for my education. And I thank God that I got a chance, the privilege to read the great books in a context where we could discuss them with, if not everyone, a ton of people that were really seeking reality and really seeking to understand the truth and believing that it's findable and that it matters. And I'm glad that I experienced such a small school and made so many, and the relationships that I developed there just endure in a way that I don't think they would have endured at a bigger school. And that's so anyway, just mad props to TAC. You're doing it. They're going to do it again. So there's going to be another 400 or so that'll be able, that's been being turned away or whatever, that will now be able to have the same experience, and they'll develop their own traditions and their own ways of doing things. And there'll be a different vibe, the same way Annapolis is different than Santa Fe with St. John's. But I can't imagine that the culture won't be a similar culture and, a similar idea behind it. And I think that, you know, I remember, asking President Dillon one time, standing outside of the Our Lady of the Most Blessed Trinity, or the Most Holy Trinity, the new chapel they built a few years ago. It's beautiful, big, expensive, crazy chapel. And I was like, Dr. Dillon, what's this all about? And I pointed towards, he said, it's evangelization. I want people to ask, why would they spend so much money and take so much time, so much care, so much planning on something that I don't take seriously? What value do they see in that? The Blessed Sacrament, right? I think 400, that's evangelization. All right, let's go to the break. You're listening to The Counterposition. I'm your host. We'll see you on the other side.
Let my sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
Let me skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. Only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so we're talking about TAC's new campus in Northfield, Massachusetts, and about how bigger is not always better. And I promised, I just remembered during the break, I promised I'd tell you a funny story. So I was at an alumni dinner, right? And I was sitting with David Quackenbush, who is just one of the guy has more wonder and more desire for reality in his little finger than most people have in their whole body. I love David Quackenbush. So we're sitting at this table and he's trying to tell me this story about something that was going on or whatever. And so then, kind of just, you know, people sat down at the table and started getting loud, and it was like, it was obviously just not going to be conducive to the conversation we wanted to have. And so we moved to a different table. But when I moved, there wasn't a place setting where I sat down. And so all these students who were volunteering or like being paid to student workers to come over and, to serve us started bringing me a plate and a salad plate and some silverware and a wine glass and all the things that I needed. And so he's trying to tell me the story, and we keep getting interrupted by people setting things in front of me and asking me if I need such and such. Right. And he looks at me, David Quackenbush looks at me and says, there's a flurry of activity around you. And I point to my belly, my Chestertonian largesse, if you will. And I say, well, you know, it's gravity, implying that these things were being attracted to me on a physical level because I was so much larger than them. And without missing a beat, Quackenbush says, oh, I'm attending mass. That might be the quickest, funniest pun I've ever heard in my life. That was amazing. I'm attending mass. Catholic college, Mass. Yeah. That. Yeah. All right. So anyway, congratulations to my alma mater. And so if you want to go to, you want to read the great books and you're Catholic, or you're not Catholic, but you believe in truth and you want to read it in an environment where truth matters and they believe it's findable, look into Thomas Aquinas College. And if for some reason, hey, look at that. Should probably turn my phone off before I do a radio show. And if for some reason you want to read these books and you are allergic to the same climate as the south of France and having a beach nearby and perfect Mexican food and being one of the most desirable locations in the world, and well, then you can go to the Northfield campus. I'm sure it's going to be, I'm sure New England's gorgeous. I've actually never been to New England. I've been to New York City, and that's the only place in the Northeast I've been to. And I live in Denver, Colorado, where it's cold and everything. And it has its own like crazy, beautiful beauty that like draws you. So, did I just say crazy, beautiful beauty? I did. Oh, that was what I've written. I should figure out how to say in Latin what I've said. I've said, I think that there's some beauty. I think some beauty is less beautiful than others, and some beauty is crazy beautiful. I think that, Denver is one of those places, and certainly the South Central Coast of California is. All right, moving on. Okay. So, I want to get into some ideas behind this stuff, but first of all, I had the worst day yesterday. I was in an existential crisis. I was in a mental strategic point of panic and frustration with my life and my projects. Spiritually, I was like in deep interior desolation. I was in physical pain with my neck and my shoulder. I was stuck at work all day long and no one could cover me. I tried to get someone to switch shifts with me so I could have a mental health day and just take off, and no one could do it. So I was stuck behind a bar all day, and people were just like treating me like absolute hell yesterday. Mostly just random business customers from outside of our world, you know. Yes, I don't know what it was. There was a meeting downstairs from some health thing, and people were coming and going and stuff. It was a flurry of activity, and it was mostly dudes I don't know in suits that are not in any way related to our world. And so these four guys come in, and they're obviously grabbing some coffee and some food before a meeting, and they're in kind of a hurry. Two of them are like super nice to me, and they're the older guys. This kid comes in. I say a kid. He's probably in his late 20s, early 30s. This kid in a suit comes in, and he's running around like a madman. He's on the phone, and he's like trying to be on the phone and relay what's being said and like have a meeting with these guys while he's buying coffee for me and microwaving a breakfast burrito and all this stuff. Won't come get his coffee. Keeps looking at me like, where's my coffee? I keep calling out his coffee and pointing to it. I guess he thinks that I'm going to bring it to him. That's not our service model. We have a delivery. I'm willing to go the extra mile on a good day for people that are even being rude to me. I'm willing to go the extra mile on any day for people who have been kind. Yesterday, I left these coffees on the counter. I'm not proud of that. I just kept pointing to it, calling it out. You know, I mean, he just was ignoring me. The guy spoke tersely to me, and he had me ring this whole table full of stuff up. Went and did this stuff, and he wouldn't come pay for the stuff. And finally, someone else needed to check out, and I had all this stuff, and I didn't want to as a complicated order, so I didn't want to re-ring all this. I'm like, sir, can I please get your credit card? I need to clear out the point of sale so I can ring them up. And he got up on the phone having the meeting without looking at me and literally threw the credit card at me. It slid across the counter and bounced off my belly. I was livid. And I admit it's pride, it's ego on my part, I should, you know, go, I don't know, maybe he's nervous. Maybe this is the biggest meeting of his life. Maybe he's got a startup and it's about to fail. And this is the last meeting. Like if he doesn't get this, everything's gone. I mean, I did, but I was just not in a place to be present in that way to him yesterday. And that's my fault. But man, just all day. It was just like that all day. Just like had people come in, try to have a conference call in the middle of an academic cafe. Students around studying, reading books all around. And they wanted to try to came in asking for the conference room. Conference room is booked. And I told them that. And so they tried to have a conference call without on speakerphone, like without, and like in the middle of the cafe, like where everyone could hear everything they were saying. And I was just like, no, before they could even set it up, I'm like, you guys have like headphones or something? No, you can't do that. And they were nice about it. They went outside, but it's just, I put stuff on Facebook two or three times. If you're friends of mine, you probably saw them. I was just like, people were literally like texting me going, are you okay? I was just like, it all piled up. Spiritual, vocational, career, strategy, pain, mental, all the above all got on me at once yesterday. And I was just ready to snap, man. I was just doing my best to get through the end of the day. But the day ended well. I got to the end of the day and I was just like, I closed up. I did some work I needed to get done on the computer. I had not hardly eaten all day and I was starving. And I went, you know what? I'm going to turn this around. I'm going to be in a good mood by the time I go to bed. So I went to Sushi Katsu and I ate an immense amount of sushi and that really helped. Sushi fixes everything. And then I went to the gym and I did my little hot, cold, hot, cold, hot, cold thing and then swam some laps until like my neck was like, I'm going to say 50% better. It's pretty solid. It was feeling better, but still kind of hurt and was still swollen. So here's the best thing though. My plan was to stop by, get a bottle of bourbon, go home. I was going to have a nice stiff drink, sit in my recliner, watch Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., at least the first half of the latest episode, go to sleep early, take some naproxen or something and go to sleep. So I'm sitting there, drink in hand, about to fire up the show, and there's a little knock on the door, and it's Perry West, my roommate, my friend. And Perry is one of the best people in the world. I would say that before last night. But Perry grew up with a mom who was a massage therapist. So he grew up being worked on his entire life, and he picked it up. And so I didn't quite realize this until Perry was like, hey, let me work on your shoulder for you. Let me work on that neck for you. So I sat down on the floor, Perry sat on the bed, and he worked on my neck and shoulders for me for like 20, 30 minutes. Dude should open like a massage therapy salon or something. He's got it down. Homeboy picked it up, man. And he like worked out. I mean, by the time I went to bed, like my neck wasn't hurting really anymore. And I got up this morning and I'm going to say my neck and shoulders, like maybe 10% of the pain it was yesterday. So the moral of the story is, if you're in spiritual desolation, physical pain, vocational freak out, existential angst, sushi, hot, cold, bourbon, Perry West. That's the solution to your, I don't know if I could provide any of those things for you. But so that was the epic saga of my yesterday. Let's go to the break. You're listening to The Counter Position.
Then how we crave a hanging in his dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
People singing, please don't sting, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am Your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right. So, I was, I told you about my horrible yesterday. All the crap. I just had the worst day yesterday. And it ended up really good. Thanks to friends and bourbon and sushi. And D all the above, I feel dramatically better today. I was just in a funk yesterday. I'm not in absolute desolation today. I feel fairly optimistic. I kind of got a bead on what I need to do. Just like, and my neck doesn't hurt as bad. So, and I'm excited because tomorrow, I have, we're doing a couple times a month, we're doing an integral ecology, reading group. And, with the, and you caught the, like a couple people on the tail end, if you're listening a few episodes ago, cause I surprised people and made them be on the show at the last minute. So Zach, the, space plumber candler, Adam, I almost got shot by Wendelberry Beach, and, Andrew, the, little brother of Adam, I almost got shot by in Wendelberry Beach. And Jared Stout, the lovely and talented Jared Stout, professor and philosophical man about town. And I'm hoping to get Jason from Commonwealth Coffee over tomorrow. And we're reading some Peter Marin. But we're reading some little essays about Peter Marin, one of the co-founder of the Catholic Worker Movement, by Dorothy Day, the other founder. And Marin was just such a character, man. He's just an interesting guy. And, yes, we're going to be talking about that tomorrow. And then tomorrow night, if you're, in the Denver area, I think it's like 6:00. There's Concerts for Causes, and it's at the Knights of Columbus Hall, and it's $5 and a pair of socks to get in the door. And the person playing is the lovely and talented and aforementioned massage therapist, Perry West. He's not a massage therapist. He's a songwriter and a Catholic journalist. But if Perry West ever offers you a back rub, take it. I didn't even know that. And I hooked him up with Justin Schneer as his mentor a million years ago when he was in high school. And I kind of introduced those two, knowing they would hit it off. And they both are like famous for their back rubs. I met not long ago a fairly famous Catholic speaker over at Chris Stefanik's house. We're having a party. There was a not to be named famous Catholic speaker at the party, and he found out that I knew Justin Schneer, and the first word out of his mouth was, "Oh man, I miss Schneer's back rubs." So I think it's absolutely fitting, even Providence, that Justin Schneer was the one that kind of helped mentor and bring Perry West into the faith. It's team backer up. And I get to be the lucky guy. You know what? Justin did a similar thing one time. I remember I was working at Coffee Boy shop in the coffee house I owned in Fillmore, California. And I had had a brutal day. And my feet were like crazy in pain and swollen. I was probably dealing with gout and stuff at the time. And my feet were just like swollen as all get out. And I was in so much pain, I could barely walk. And as they did so many days, I just got like the phone call text message from Justin saying, "Hey, we got leftovers. Come over after you close, you know?" And I would just, that family would just love on me and love on me and love on me, you know, and feed me food. And one night I was just like at my wit's end, like I was yesterday. I was existentially just like ready to quit. And I was in deep desolation and physical pain. And Justin sits me on down the couch, gives me a good glass of wine, puts on a movie for us to watch, picks my feet up without asking, and starts working on my feet and gave me a foot rub. Justin massaged my feet for the better part of the movie. And when he was done, I had no swelling in my feet. And I was like, I wasn't in pain anymore. And I don't think you could have done, I don't think it was literally possible for him to do anything kinder for me at that moment. It was a spiritual work of mercy worked out through matter. It was like amazing. So you know what? We are hylomorphic beings. This is nowhere in the notes, by the way, all this massage stuff. We are hylomorphic beings. And sometimes the way you express spiritual reality and spiritual care in real ultimate care for human persons is through the physical. They may just need their shoulders rubbed. They may need their feet massaged because they're tired and their feet are killing them. They might need a glass of wine to unwind. They might need something to eat. And we think about these things like in regarding the poor, like giving them something to eat or something to drink when they're thirsty. But you know what? Just cooking someone you love, just for no reason in the middle of the week, just taking the time, just cook them something nice and put a beautiful plate of food in front of them and give them a glass of wine and go, here you go. Enjoy. That is a spiritual work of mercy. I know it's not the one of the spiritual works of mercy. And, you know, I'm not trying to play that corporal versus spiritual works of mercy in the classical theology. I'm saying that is a work of mercy that is a person to person. You're speaking to a person on a deep, personal, real, beyond the physical level. And you're using matter and the manipulation of matter to do that. Anyway, getting back onto my outline here. Okay, so after my yesterday craziness, what was it I said a while ago? I'm coining all these phrases. The odyssey of my yesterday. So we've so far today I've said crazy beautiful beauty, the odyssey of my yesterday. I think I'm going to name this episode that. Oh, crazy beautiful beauty and the odyssey of my yesterday. Where do I come up with this stuff? So I saw a quote. I got up this morning and I was, I'll be honest, I was in the bathroom. I was reading The Risk of Education. You know, I think that there is, we're grown people. We can talk about this. The bathroom devotional is a very important aspect of any Christian's life, and keeping a solid work that you need to read slowly, just a couple of paragraphs and then kind of digest it and think about it, leaving that in your bathroom is a life hack of like on the spiritual level. That's worth doing. Some kind of devotion. The bathroom devotional is, I've been a champion for years, and for some reason, there's like a small minority of people. They're very sheepish about the idea of like admitting they read in the bathroom. You read in the bathroom. So I was reading The Risk of Education this morning in the bathroom. But I'm just letting out so much out. Massages, foot rubs, bathroom, you know. This is a very personal show. So I'm reading The Risk of Education by Monsignor Giuzzani. Luigi Giuzzani, not some other Monsignor Giuzzani. And he quoted a quote from the letter to Diognetus or Dionysius. I'm not sure how you're supposed to say that. Which is a really cool work, by the way, if you want to read some people call it the so-called letter to Dionysius, that they say like pseudo Dionysius or something, right? The so-called letter. We don't know if it really was a letter to that guy, right? I don't know why they call it that. I don't care who wrote it. It's true and it's good. And one of the things is just talking about the early church and talking about how Christians live differently. And you know that I've been gone on and on and on about like right after the Obergefell decision. And I kept hitting that article in the Boston Pilot by Jose Medina over and over again about how now, like in the early church, we need to live in a surprising way. Well, one way that was surprising, you see a bunch of it, but in this one quote, you see it in a letter to Dionysius. It's Dionysius, not Nietzsche. Yeah, because it's like it's U.S., not I-U-S. Yeah, so Dionysius. I'm going with that. I'm taking a drink of my coffee, and I'm sticking with my pronunciation. I'm finishing my coffee. Letter to Dionysius. He says that they had a respect for each other, or they respected each other to a degree that others couldn't understand. Others cannot understand. They respect each other to a degree that others cannot understand. He says, we want to put in the past tense that what these early Christians did, they respected each other in a way that other people couldn't understand it. And Jazani makes the point that the root of that word respect is to see someone, to see something, but to keep something else kind of in the corner of your eye. It's to see two things at once, so to speak. It's to see something, but in the context of kind of like you're looking at something else, right? And in that place, you're looking at persons and human persons while keeping God in sight in their relationship to God and your relationship to God at the same time. You're looking at both God and man at the same time. That's why the incarnation was so powerful. You could do that without making your eyes hurt, because you could look right at the same guy. Well, speaking of guys you can look at and see that, when I get back, I heard a crazy story while I was in Michigan. I want to relay it, and it popped to my mind when I heard this Diognetus, letter to Diognetus quote. And it's kind of a crazy coincidence. So we're going to talk about an intriguing aspect of respect and seeing two things at once. You're listening to The Counterposition. I'm your host, Andrew Whaley.
Then all the colored glass that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to see. Love bedecked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, here we are, the final lap, the fourth lap, the open mile. The fat boy is running around at the foreign school being mocked by other people. Hey, I added, so don't, if you know any of these people, don't tell. I added Mike Henderson, who evidently is a state representative now, but he was Coach Henderson back in the day. I added him on Facebook, and he accepted my friendship. So I am now in contact with the guy that I've been threatening for 200-something episodes to get on as for an interview and ask him about educational theory 7, and I'm going to on the air tell him how mean it was for those coaches to make fat guys that were really good at shot and discus, after they had excelled at their chosen event, to humiliate themselves by running the open mile in front of girls from another school. I'm connected to that guy now. I could send him a Facebook message and set up an interview, and I'm gonna call him on the carpet, right on the show. I'm gonna tell him how bad that hurt. Oh gosh, the counterposition. All right, so we're talking about the letter to Diognetus and his quote. This quote is on the chalkboard in my cafe. As we speak, I just put it up this morning. Should be some interesting conversation float around about that. The quote was that they respect each other to an extent that others cannot understand. Some translations say they hold each other to such a regard that is inconceivable to others. But the real word there, the root is respect, which means to see something, but to hold something else kind of in the corner of your eye at the same time, to kind of see something in light of something else. At least that's what Monsignor Jazani says. I think it's probably true. If it's not true, I don't care, because it's truth. It's true. I don't know that it's grammatically true, but the guy was crazy smart. And so if he says that, I didn't go look up the Greek word or the Latin word. I guess if it had been Latin, it would be respectere. And spectre, see, there's a, it'd be okay. Yeah. I'll buy it. It sounds good so far in my mind from what I remember of Latin. So we're talking about that. Now, over the weekend, I heard a crazy story from a priest I'm friends with, and I'm going to relay it without telling you who the priest is. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. I bring him on the show and let him tell the story, but I don't, you know. So there's this priest. He's a young guy. I'll tell you this much. He's a former Focus missionary. That narrows it down to a bunch of them because a lot of them became priests. And at one point, he started feeling like God wanted him to do street preaching. Now, if you listen to this show at all, I've done street preaching, so I can't stand street preaching. I think it's a bad way to share the gospel. I think it's like the spiritual equivalent of a one night stand, or at least it's like walking up cold in a bar and like trying to ask a girl on a date. I think you build a relationship first. And he would agree with me normally, but in his younger years, whatever, he was really, really moved that he felt like he needed to have some boldness. I think it's more about him and him being willing to humiliate himself or put himself out there, you know, whatever. But he really was feeling called to go street preach. Now, I don't know, you know, why that was the case or whether it was really God. I'm assuming it was based on the story. So anyway, so he's going on and on about this, and he decides he's going to go down to this one city, to this chapel that he used to go to all the time when he was studying, and he's going to pray in that place because he had a lot of boldness when he was there. He's going to pray in that place about whether God wants him to go street preach because he's so kind of like scared and freaked out by this concept, right? And so he's going down the road, and he hears something on the radio. He's listening to a preacher on the radio, and the preacher says something about a sign, asking, not being afraid to ask for a sign in certain circumstances or something like that. Leave the theology of that alone. I have bad taste in my mouth from the way I was raised as a Protestant during my Protestant times with the signs thing. But God, there's all kinds of stuff I disagree with. But I agree with it anyway in this story. So he says, he asked for a sign. He's like, Lord, if you want me to go street preach, I want you to send me a sign. And he looked on the side of the road. He's going 85 miles an hour, like in the far left lane. And he sees a guy hitchhiking. It looks like he's about half homeless. And he knows with every ounce of every core of his being that he's supposed to pick up this hitchhiker. So he both goes from 85 to stop and cuts across four lanes of traffic at the same time, gets to the side of the road. This guy runs up, gets in the car. The guy looks like he's about half homeless, and he gets in, thanks him. And when he looks at him, this guy has the eye closest to the priest from the pastor. So I guess the guy's left eye is fine. And the right eye, he's got like a lazy eye or like something messed up, but this lazy eye looks straight up. So the whole time this guy's talking to him, he's looking at him and he's looking up towards the heavens at the same time. Hence, respect, keeping two things in, looking at a person and looking at something else at the same time, right? So he's looking at the priest and he's looking at God at the same time, right? And they start talking. He's like, so what are you doing? He's like, you know, he asked him, you know, what do you do? I'm a priest. And he's like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm going down to the prayer of this chapel to pray about street preaching. Well, you don't need to pray. Let's go preach the gospel. I'll go with you. Let's go preach. And so this homeless guy or whatever is like trying to get a bus ticket, trying to get somewhere. And he's a Christian. And evidently he's got some, he's preaching to this, he's in the process of like preaching to this priest that's giving him a ride. He's telling him all about it. He ends up, they decide that they're just going to go to this campus and they're going to street preach. And so they go to this place and they pull up on this corner and they get going. And they're, so this priest who I think is like in civvies. He's not in clerics. And this half homeless dude that he picked up on the side of the road on the way to go pray about whether or not he should street preach. They're on the corner tag team street preaching. And there's this crazy half homeless guy with one eye that looks right at you and one that looks up at God, like preaching, right? And it's good, evidently. The guy's a good preacher. He knows God, right? And so they get done street preaching and talk to some people and stuff. And then they go and he gets him a bus ticket, but then the last bus where he was going had left for the day, so he's kind of stuck. So this priest puts him up in a hotel. And then he's driving away and he's reflecting on this in the car and he's praying about it and this meaningful thing that happened to him. And he's like, What if that was Jesus? Oh my gosh, I just left Jesus in a hotel. So he starts panicking about whether he just walked away from a theophany and put him up in a hotel. And I assured him that everyone loves a night off in a hotel. You know, I mean, even Jesus Christ. And he's like, you know, man, this bed is like way more comfortable than my own. You know, this is like, well, what is this? Is this like a pillow top? I mean, you know, you got all the cable channels, free shampoo and all that, room service, mini bar. I mean, Christ is fully God and fully man and like us in every way but sin. And there ain't no sin in liking a whole, you know, 26 cable channels and a mini bar. I mean, right? So clearly, QED. Jesus would love a night off in a hotel, right? I mean, put his feet up, take a hot bath, you know? So I assured this priest that there's nothing wrong with leaving Jesus in a hotel, as long as it's a decent hotel. I mean, if you leave Jesus in like a bad hotel with like a loud and like a bad bed and like only like a few channels, I mean, you might be doing some time in purgatory. So there you go. All right, so I'm going to... All right, I got less than 2 minutes. I got another idea I want to talk to you about real fast. Just a little insight that I have about how we see each other and hold each other in. We respect each other. We see each other in light of the bigger reality that we're in, right? So I was sitting, in this rectory over the weekend where I was staying, and there was a copy of the Wall Street Journal magazine, like that magazine insert from the weekend. I picked it up and there's like a fashion spread, right? So I'm like, oh, you know, black and white, cool photographs, pretty girl, you know, and I'm looking at this fashion spread, right? And I'm like, she looks familiar. Who is that? And I'm looking around. I can't find it. I realize the name of the model isn't anywhere. There's like 12, 13 pictures of this woman, and the photographer's name is listed on every one of them. Every piece of clothing she's wearing is listed and who made it. Even the person who did hair and makeup on each shot is listed. But the person depicted in the picture is not named. And that just kind of shocked me. So as I was going through the airport and stuff, kind of going through my life, picking up these different magazines and looking at like fashion spreads, and I'm seeing that unless they're like super famous and they don't need to have the name and they don't tell you who it is, you don't know who the person is. And I realized that they're just like this clothes. We've just reduced these people to like these clothing racks. I mean, it's kind of like a non-lewd version of pornography or something. You've just reduced them to something pretty to hang a shirt on, you know? And I ultimately realized that they had told you about everything that they consider made. And they know who made all these things, the hairdo, the photograph, the shirt, but they don't consider the person made and they don't know who made them. And that's why they don't name them. Put that in your noodle and see, bounce it around till the next time. All right. Oh man. All right. So let's pull the plug and pop the cork on another episode of The Counter Position. Thanks for coming out, kids.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.